read a statement. We'll take turns and first come first in the order, and I think Mara's going to be able to help us with that. And I'd like, at this point, we're going to limit testimony to 5 minutes. If we have, you know, lots of people at this point, Mara, do we have, how many people do we have?
I only currently have one person online to speak and one letter to read into the record.
Okay, then I think we could stick with a 5 minute limitation. And then if people start calling in or having specific questions, then we can address that at that point. So I'll just go ahead and put a timer on my phone real quick. Why don't we start with who's online, so that they don't have to, if that's easier, and then you could read the one letter that we received.
Okay, we're going to start with Nicole Olson. And Nicole, I will be unmuting your phone.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes, can you speak a little louder though?
Yeah, let me try. How about now?
Okay, say it again.
How about now?
That's great. Go ahead and start when you're ready.
Okay. So I already sent a letter to all the board members, but there's just a few other key points I wanted to get out vocally while everyone's here. So I was reading through the state Smart Start Guide, and it clearly states the definition of low risk green is minimal to no level of community transmission. We currently have no local active cases in this town and haven't for quite some time. The state's Smart Start Guide also states, and I quote, districts may want to consider prioritizing in-person school for elementary age children and younger, particularly those third grade and younger, and focus on cohorting in these groups. They also say lower elementary has a greater need for in-person and group-based instruction with close contact support to support social and emotional and academic development. The state plan also says cohorting is a key strategy in reducing the spread of the virus. My kids are at school part-time. They'll have to be in some form of daycare the rest of the time. This means they'll be mingling with more children than they would if they would just be in school full-time. I really don't feel comfortable with kids having to mask in the classroom. If class sizes are smaller, then I don't see why it's necessary. The American Academy of Pediatrics recently put out a guide for reopening schools and states that schools should consider whether the use of face coverings is developmentally appropriate and feasible, and whether the policy can be instituted safely, like when younger mask wearers are constantly touching their face because the mask is uncomfortable. And lastly, the requirement to participate in virtual learning is not feasible for elementary age school children in my mind. For my kinder and third grader, it would mean having constant supervision and interaction from a parent or other adult to keep them on task on their screen. I personally don't want my kids glued to a screen for multiple hours throughout the day to participate in school. And I'll end all that by saying thank you to each and every one of you. I know that everybody just wants to keep our kids and our community safe, and I know this isn't an easy task, so thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Nicole. Okay, thank you, Nicole. We have to kind of, there'll be pauses if you're listening on the radio, just because we are dealing with technology to mute and unmute us so that we can hear a caller calling in. They have to mute us in order to have that call come in. So just if you do hear pauses, it's a technical switchover. So next we'll have Mara. Do you want
to? We actually have a caller who would like to speak, Alice Williams, I believe.
Okay. And Alice, if you were able to hear earlier, great. But I'm just going to remind the public that you have 5 minutes to testify.
Okay. And can you hear me? Okay.
We can. Go ahead when you're ready.
Okay. I have, I guess, more questions than anything. But before I get started, I will say thank you to Nicole for her comments. I 100% agree with what she just said. I have questions regarding plans for recess, gym, and swim. I haven't heard any specific information on how those things will be facilitated. And I feel like, along with the importance of kids being in a social environment with their peers, I feel it's really important that they also get that physical activity. And I had a couple other questions about how the distance learning will specifically be facilitated, if it's necessary, or if a family chooses to do distance learning through the Petersburg School District. I haven't gotten any specific information on that yet either. Like if it's a program that we can do around our own schedule, or if it will be a set schedule that kids will have certain specific times of day that they have to attend their distance learning classes. And I guess those questions would also go for if or when they are doing half days, or they have to do distance learning for whatever other reason, how that's going to be facilitated. Again, if it's flexible or if it's on a fixed schedule. Also, I'm curious with the no symptom policy, the sick policy, and I would like information on what the return to school policy would be for a student who has been out sick, or at any time kids are going to end up with a runny nose or a cough or whatever. And what I'm not sure is if they have to be 100% symptom free, or if they have to have a COVID test before they can return to school, or what the policy is going to be with that. And then also, if kids are out of school for a significant period of time due to having any symptom, how their education is going to be delivered. Those are my basic questions. And I totally understand if, all of those can't be answered like right now, but those are a couple of things that have been on my mind. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Alice.
Okay, I don't have anyone else that would like to speak online, but I do have one letter to read into the record. It is a letter from Katie Eddy. Dear School Board, I am writing in regards to the Petersburg Smart Start Plan released for review on August 3rd, 2020. I am deeply troubled by the plan and unsure how my family with young students is going to function within the proposed plan, or how my students will be able to receive a sufficient education with the proposed plan. During the press conference on August 4th, 2020, the Governor Dunleavy, Commissioner Johnson, and Dr. Zink, they explained that the Smart Start guidelines are a tool to create a framework for school districts to begin crafting a plan, not set in stone rules or mandates that must be followed. They also stressed that for communities with little or no transmission, they expect students to be back in school full-time with little to no disruption. Specifically, they mentioned that K-5 students should be back in school for in-person instruction. The community surveys over the last several months have overwhelmingly indicated that virtual learning, specifically for elementary age students, was not a viable mode to provide education. The majority of young children lack the self-control, time management, attention span, and technical abilities to navigate a virtual classroom without constant adult supervision. Those concerns don't even begin to touch on the overall concern about cyber safety, online bullying, depression, and anxiety across the whole student population. As the plan currently reads, either my husband or I will have to reduce hours or not work in order to facilitate the virtual educational requirements of the district. The economic impact of students not returning to school will be severe and potentially crippling businesses in Petersburg. For example, in my workplace, there are 6 employees. 3 of us have children in elementary school. How does my employer continue to provide services with half the workforce unable to be dialed into work? How does my family replace the income or find someone else to provide the educational support to our children? How do my children, 5 and 8, thrive and not just survive? Petersburg has been very fortunate and our COVID-19 numbers have not grown. The virus has not been spreading and our hospitals have not been filling with the ill. How does the school board and the school district justify the reduction in educational services, going against the state guidelines when our caseload is non-existent or very low? After reading through the state guidelines and proposed plan by the Petersburg School District, I have some questions for the board. Please provide me with the exact point at which the district will be required to turn a parent into the state for their child or children not attending virtual classes. Working parents will not be able to provide the supervision, direction, or time management of their students and maintain a job. If parents send their students to any in-person school but do not attend virtual classes, what action will be taken? At what point will a child fail their grade or class for not attending virtual sessions? Will the district force children forward into the next grade level, whether or not the student has attended the full school year or received the full education required of their grade level? What is the long-term plan of the school board to facilitate a potentially large number of students that need to repeat a grade? If students are not able to attend virtual school, then how can they progress to their next grade level? For households with multiple children, will they be on the same AM/PM shift? What is the district's plan for addressing the mental health of students that are left home alone or with unsafe supervision and suffer abuse, neglect, and mental health issues? How will you each address the workforce reduction for other essential services when the workforce is unable to show up to work because their children are not able to go to school? We've all witnessed the long lines at the post office due to reduction in staff. So now what if you have to wait in line 2 hours at the grocery store or an hour to deposit your paycheck? Will you be able to wait 3 hours to pick up supplies at the hardware store? What direction would you give single, solo parents and or dual working families having to choose between a job and teaching their children? If they are lucky enough to find childcare, how will those childcare providers be able to assist students with their homework and virtual classrooms? What is the district's plan to incorporate students back into a Common Core curriculum after they've been homeschooled without Common Core? What are the specific disciplinary actions for children that do not comply with the masking rules? Can you provide me with a discipline plan for mask compliance based on the student's grade level? Will teachers be able to determine the time when students are required to wear masks and when they can be removed? How will the district prevent specific classrooms from having more extensive masking requirements than other classrooms? My understanding of the Smart Start guidelines issued by the state are that they are a guide for districts, but not mandates or required mode of operation. Why is our district treating these guidelines as non-negotiable? With the understanding that the school district is operating in a green, yellow, and red plan, what benchmarks has the board identified that will move the district from one plan to the other? Some school districts have given exact numbers for each zone based on the number of cases in the school, not the community. Why is our school district taking such a strict stance when other communities in Southeast, which do not have a legitimate caseload, are opening their doors to students? Thank you for your time and effort in creating a plan to bring our students back to school. Please consider the overall impact of this district's plan. Make the modifications needed and consider the physical, mental, and emotional well-being of the students as we send them back to school. Sincerely, Katie Eddy.
Okay. Thank you. Have we had anybody else call in or email?
I don't see anyone else online who would like to speak.
Okay. We had other letters that people emailed the board, and I did have one in particular that she said I gotta pull it up that she would like read. I had asked her. There we are. Okay. This is from Kelly and Carson Wood. I'll take my mask off to make it a little bit easier since mine's so tight. We are writing to you in regard to your school reopening plan. We fully support and are excited about the work you have put into this current plan and are hoping it will be finalized as long as the state and CDC keep their plans as is. We are strongly considering homeschooling our two girls, third grade and fifth grade, this year due to concerns about in-class education and risk to our family associated with COVID. As your current plan stands, we feel very confident that our children are in good hands and the risk of viral transmission will be low this school year. We commend you for all the hard work you have put into this plan. We understand these decisions are not easy and they are not everyone in the community is content with the situation. We truly feel this is a great compromise and will keep our children and their educators safe as well as keep our kids learning despite this unsavory situation. Thank you 1,000 times for helping to keep our community going strong. Sincerely, Kelly, Carson, Kaya, and Mia Wood. Okay, did anybody else have any comments from people in the community before we move on to comments from board members? I think if the board is, I don't think we have to vote on this, but maybe just a kind of a discussion. if someone does call in later in our meeting, I feel like we should give them the opportunity to move back to number six potentially and hear from them, because as they hear us discussing, questions might arise in their mind that they aren't thinking about right now, or just clarification. I'm comfortable with that. If we'll still limit testimony or comments to 5 minutes, but because they're not able to be here, and makes it a little more complicated sometimes to make it aware that you want to have ask a question. So I'm comfortable with it if you all are. Okay, I think we can move on to comments from board members. Does anybody want to start?
I do have something to say, but
go ahead.
You can address yours first.
Nope.
If you would
go
like.
Right ahead.
Well, yours are follow-ups to some of these, but it might make more sense.
But okay.
It makes more sense.
Okay. So I feel I'm hoping I can address some of the questions that were raised in letters that we got. We did get a couple at the 11th hour, so I haven't been able to really review those, but hopefully we'll be able, between all of us, answer some of these questions. And I guess I want to just remind people as they're listening that this is a plan that is going to evolve and potentially change. This is a way to get us going. It is not the Bible. It is not set in stone, but it is a way to get us in the door and give our both staff as well as kids an opportunity, kids K through 12, an opportunity to test out an unprecedented event. None of us were alive in 1918 to go through this. And so I really think that's what we need to remember, is that this is kind of almost the first month, maybe, is a practice run to make sure we're all know what we need to be doing. And so when, you know, the frustration over half days versus full days versus, you know, whatever, it doesn't mean that this won't look different in a month, you know. And I think also realizing that at least, you know, it seems like most of the attention is on K through fifth grade, not necessarily middle school and high school, but that it's also a reminder that it's also a function of staffing. If you don't have the staff, you cannot have a full-time day. If you don't have the room, you can't have a full-time day. And I just want to keep that in mind. So Katie asked quite a few questions that I think are somewhat duplicate for other people in the community. And so I feel like that might be the best way for me to start, is we can kind of go through some of her questions, and hopefully that'll answer some other people's questions, or just, you know, general, how is that going to play out, or how is that going to be addressed? So let's see, where did we start? With her first question, she wanted to know if parents will be turned into the state for not attending virtual classes. I don't know what our current policy is. I know that it's difficult now with kids coming to school. We don't have a truancy officer. We don't have a mechanism for enforcing that anyway, whether they show up to school or not. We try our best. That's my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not going to probably be any different than whether you're in virtual school or if you're showing up every day or every other day to school.
Yeah, and I think the other thing just to keep in mind is, just as you said at the very beginning about mm-hmm. the unprecedented nature of this, that I think flexibility is the key. So we're going to be willing, and clearly that's at the top of our mindset. You know, we're going to be working with families to figure out what works best for them. And there are families who really do have, you know, significant challenges with childcare or sharing those kinds of responsibilities. And so I understand the concern, especially for the youngest children with the distance delivery. It's very challenging. And actually, some of the information I'm going to share with you later, and that we will be sharing out with families to look through, and about the virtual options and that sort of thing, is it does require, you know, adult help. And we know that. So we would be willing to clearly look at other sorts of non-digital options. So I guess we can clarify some of those mm-hmm. things too.
Sarah? Yes, go ahead.
Can you explain or help me understand the format of, like, if we want to pipe in,
I think it'd be good just to say you want to say something, or you have a comment or something to add. No, I think we have to kind of keep it fluid.
Okay.
So we don't forget, because I have to go through everything and it's like, oh, I had a question earlier, I can't remember what it is.
Okay. Regarding attendance and this new concept of virtual or distance delivery, is that something that we might need to review the policy on? I don't have I I'm working from my phone, so I don't have the policy in front of me, but I know we have a policy about attendance. I'm wondering that along with other things that maybe are the policies just were never created with this sort of situation in mind. So at some point, maybe we need to talk about in future meetings about policy updates, maybe add that to our list, the list of things to do.
The list of things.
So that we make sure those are accurately reflected and are reflecting this totally new sort of style of educating.
Yeah.
Do you know how it's handled right now with, you know, the kid is enrolled in virtual high school? I mean, we have that already where a kid can take a class that we don't mm-hmm. offer mm-hmm. through that program. I know they're given a designated time, right, to sit in the library and work on it.
They can have a VHS class time mm-hmm. During their regular schedule. And those are mostly asynchronous, which means that you are able to access those without having to be exactly at, you know, 11 a.m. every day.
Okay.
And so, and I think that's some of what Katie and some other people have asked questions about as well, you know, mm-hmm. is what does that look like? And are there other options or creative ways that we can help kids move through, you know, curriculum in that sense that might not be all on an iPad or a mm-hmm. laptop, you know? Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure we have a definitive answer on that because we would have to change our policy, but I would think that we would treat it similar. Truancy issues, just like if they're not showing up to the building. Her next question was, at what point will a child fail their grade or class for not attending virtual sessions? And will the district force children forward into the next grade level, whether or not the student has attended the full school year or received the full education required for their grade? Well, I can currently say is that I don't believe we force kids into the next grade at any time. It's a consultation between parents, the teacher, and I believe the principal. So if a child does not appear to be ready for the next grade, whether it's a normal year or a strange year, am I wrong?
Nope, that's true. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, again, it really would maybe be less about the time and more about how well they're doing. So I think that would come down to more, you know, looking at assessments and seeing where they are. Mm-hmm. And that's some of what we need to do even this fall after last spring. You know, we need to determine what things, you know, where are some of the gaps and what do we need to do to move forward from there. So I would say it's based more on how they're performing and how well they're doing on the standards specifically rather than just time sensitive, mm-hmm. I guess is what I would say. Mm-hmm.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yes, absolutely.
On a similar note. And I talked to you briefly about this, but in Heather's plan, there is that switch where she proposes switching from standards-based grading system to actual letter grades. Mm-hmm. Is Heather available? Is she able to answer that question for us? Why that switch? And is it because of Virtual Academy?
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I think
the other way around. So right now we are currently on a letter grading system. And last year we started conversations in some grade levels about switching to standard based. We were looking at going from kindergarten and then working up with this with an incoming class. And the reason that I can't really make that decision right now is because our teachers aren't in the building. Their contracts have not started. Really, I'm not in the building at this time, so we haven't really had a full-on conversation. We've had more of emergency conversations.
And maybe, do you mind elaborating on what standard-based for people that are listening?
Sure. Juneau School District, about 7 years ago, took our standards, the Common Core standards, and they did an extensive study, extensive research on what are those essential standards? What are the power standards? What are the standards that really stand out that we need them to know in order to go to the next grade? And what are the standards that, not that we can leave alone, but that go throughout the grade levels? And so when they looked at that, they pulled out the essential standards. They had community input, they had surveys, they had teacher input. They worked on this project for about 6 years and then they implemented it about 7 years ago. And we looked at the report cards all last year thinking this is something that we really wanted to go towards. Grading at the elementary school has been looked at for the last 5 years with a committee for those going grades. And they have really looked at standard-based grading. And so we were going down that road, but we never finished that conversation. And I don't know how people feel about it. And I don't feel that it's a conversation that I can have with myself to make that decision. I feel that it's a conversation that needs to be had with the whole staff.
So for someone listening that maybe isn't quite familiar with all that, so a child would be graded based on whether they met the standard versus a bunch of tests? Or
in general, they use a 4-point scale. And so a 1 means, a 4 means that they have exceeded that standard. A 1 means that they are not on track to meeting that standard. And so what happens is when they reach third grade and they're giving what we call the PEAKS assessment at this time, those standards are tested upon. And if the child isn't meeting that standard, the chances of them testing on that standard are, you know, it's just not very well. And so we're trying to figure out how to move and to get those standards. So for kindergarten, it's counting, and I might miss say this. So, and Michelle's on here, she's really good at this. But for kindergarten, they need to learn how to count to 20. They need to identify the numbers 1 through 20. And then in first grade, they increase on that standard. So it's those standards that can be measured per grade level with the curriculum that we're using. And so in answer to Katie's question about what kind of disciplinary action, I don't believe that there's any disciplinary action that would come from that. However, we're trying to get those standards in. There's kindergarten, there's first grade, there's all these standards that have to be taught according to what the state is holding us accountable to. Those are science and social studies standards. So what I was trying to do when I devised that schedule was trying to get, we know that within that 3 hours, we can teach reading, writing, and math. I don't know if we can teach science and social studies within that time period. Definitely, we're going to hit upon it because a lot of our stuff is integrated, but we do need time, a little bit of time, or something creative and just something that's out of the box that we can try to teach those standards outside of that 3-hour session. And that's what we were really aiming for. And with all the parent feedback, I did remove those times for the science and social studies because once I realized it was not going to work for all the child care centers that were going to be taking these kids in the AM and PM session, I just felt that we're going to have to come back to the drawing board with that and do something a little bit more creative to get those standards in.
Okay, next question was, what is the long-term plan of the school board to facilitate a potentially large number of students that need to repeat a grade? And I think that question is making a massive assumption about our kids and our school district. And I actually believe that, you know, the potential for any children needing to repeat will be minimal. I feel like I can make that statement just as general and bold as this statement that making the assumption that massive amounts of students are going to have to repeat a grade. Do I think some of our students are going to be behind? Absolutely. It was a scramble in March, but we also are more prepared this fall than we were when we had to all of a sudden quit school and figure it out. But that's my opinion, one board member's opinion, if anybody else wants to pipe in on their feelings of that.
I agree with you on that. Kids are great at learning. They'll do it anywhere.
Yeah.
I'll pipe in on that too. I have a student who's had to repeat a grade. So I've experienced that. And I think the teacher might be listening who, you know, that was identified probably by October of the school year. And the plan began to form right then in October. where we were having discussions on a regular basis, and we made a decision by December on what he would do. Poor kid's gonna kill me. What would happen for the next school year for my child, because they were ready to implement intervention after Christmas break. So I don't anticipate, I'm guessing, I don't know, I'm not an educator, but I'm a parent with a few kids. But I know that teachers are monitoring these kiddos. They're monitoring how well they're meeting standards. And I think that we're going to see plans falling into place, or our plan. We're going to be in here talking about major changes if we're seeing that there's multiple kids that are not meeting the standard. But I know that conversation happened fast. They were on top of it. They worked with us. We talked options. They offered a plan for if we chose not to repeat the grade. And then they let us decide. So it was one of the best educational decisions we ever made, with the support of the school. So I hope that families would feel at ease knowing that this is something that occasionally happens, you know, based on the kid's maturity level or their own individual needs, and it can go really, really smoothly. But I don't think that this scenario is necessarily going to make that harder.
If students are not able to attend virtual school, then how can they progress to the next grade level? So again, I think it goes back to in-person education. It's going to be a family choice and how you choose to educate your child this fall and maybe spring. We'll have to reevaluate. But,
and I think just being creative with the options in the afternoon, in the off time, we're having a lot of conversations about how to be creative in that off time, because we know that especially for K-3, that is extremely challenging, and especially for children to try to be doing that sort of on their own or with very little direction. So we understand that, and we are very willing to look at lots of different options there that can work best for families and provide them with things that are lower stress for them in those off times, or figuring out ways to do things, more things outside, and collaborating with small pods outside of school, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
I think the next question was, households with multiple children, will they be on the same AM, PM shift? And I think that makes an assumption that they're all in the same school.
Right.
That's the question, because I would assume, because Katie, it sounds like, probably has two elementary school kids. I would assume that there's going to be some effort, but not a guarantee, that if you've got a middle schooler and high schooler, that they're also going to be on a, because theirs aren't, you know, I think
we would definitely do our best in the elementary school to make that happen if we can. Mm-hmm. And that's better for everything. It's better for busing. Busing is another huge issue for us. There's a lot of protocols around putting kids on buses. So it's just helpful if we do have families, because they can sit together. I don't know if that's an issue for this particular case, but.
Yeah. Okay. The next question was, what is the district's plan for addressing the mental health of students that are left home alone or with unsafe supervision and suffer abuse, neglect, and mental health issues? So I will say I personally had a tough time with this question, because I didn't realize the district, and maybe this sounds a little sarcastic and I don't mean it to be, that we are all responsible for the mental health of students. We're in the business, if you want to call that, of educating. When kids come to school and they do have mental health issues, the school district does do their best to refer them and deal with it. But children are left home alone all the time, my children included. Unsafe supervision, you need to call CPS then. If you see a child that is in a dire situation outside of school, then that is. But I would assume our district plan is going to be the same as before. Refer children that you're aware of to mental health professionals or child protective services. That plan has not changed. And the district's responsibility is to education. Although I would argue that our teachers and our staff give free mental health all the time to our students, but I really think that is not what we're responsible for, as crass as that may come across. It's just, we cannot do all be all. We are there to educate. Mental health professionals are there to do their part of the work, and that is not part of the plan. And we can afford to do it.
Yeah.
To bring in mental health professionals on staff. I mean, that comes down
right. And we're fortunate here because we do have a counselor in each building and they work really hard and there's a lot of work going in right now, regardless of whether we're on site or where we are in supporting families in that social emotional learning. That's been the conversation since this all went down last spring. And again, like you said, it's not new. Those supports are hugely important. And we do know that families and children have been going through a lot. It's going and will continue to, you know, the stress and pressure and fears and the continuing kind of overarching anxiety really in everyone's lives is it's very challenging. So it's definitely something that, I mean, the social emotional part of that is something we will be weaving into our regular lives there. But I agree with what you're saying about mental health services in general. That's a really large, that's a huge community conversation that we certainly.
That's a medical.
Yeah, we participate.
We're not medical. Yeah. We're in education. I mean, I think you could argue we can start doing dental plans here.
On that note, too, mm-hmm. I do want to point out, I know we have several educators and staff members in our building as well that have gone through the trauma-engaged practices training. Mm-hmm. That have also gone through the darkness into light training about child abuse and sexual abuse. And the way that, especially in our younger years, I know Ms. Brock, Ms. Curtis touch on that growth mindset and a lot of other educators as well. And that all plays into mental health as well in a very developmentally appropriate manner for our kids to figure out how they can control their own brain and what they can do if they are feeling stressed or anxious. So our teachers have been doing this for years, even mm-hmm. though it's not part of education. You can't learn if you come in riddled with trauma or any of these issues. Our teachers have been doing this and will continue to be doing this.
I agree. And I think some of it is these problems that number five question or fifth question will still be a problem whether we end the school day at 2:45 or 1 o'clock or noon or 3 o'clock. Those problems will still exist.
COVID made all of these
amplified?
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Any other comments? The next question she had was, how will you address the workforce reduction for other essential services when the workforce is unable to show up to work because their children are not able to go to school? For 6 months, and for a good portion of in March, we were in lockdown. I don't know how the workforce dealt with it. And that is not a district responsibility. That is an employee-employer responsibility. It's never been our job. And employers need to work with their employees to accommodate the potential changes in the schedule due to uncontrollable circumstances. I think it's a huge assumption that somehow the district is responsible for that. And we've never been responsible for it, and I don't think we should be responsible for the economic structure or health of Petersburg. Our responsibility is to students, and whether it's an in-service day, spring break, Christmas, or a sudden closure, it still is not the responsibility of the district to accommodate or work or provide services for essential workers, because I would argue our teachers are essential workers, but at some point their safety is going to, and the children's safety are going to override that. And I guess I'm just, again, I'm just confused where the liability lies with the district in this circumstance, with this question. So I don't know if anybody else has any comments.
I feel like I have a lot of comments. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm full of opinion.
Taking all of it.
I have to say, I think it's a good point for her to bring up. I think it's a topic that it's not necessarily our burden to solve, but I hope that employers are listening to this. I think I mentioned it one time in a conversation with you, Erica, that you know, obviously people who are self-employed are fishermen. That's a different thing. I get. I don't fully understand it, but I can appreciate what their situation is. However, employers of Petersburg, we know who they are. There are retailers, there are our service providers. I think this is a conversation really for them, for our chamber members, for our people who are running businesses. The burden is on them to look at their employees and determine how valuable they are and how they are, which I'm saying they're very valuable, not individually, but I'm saying our community, the work we all do, it's important. I think it's important for employers to be saying, hey, we're stepping up as the community of Petersburg to take care of this so that our kids can be taken care of the best they can be at school. Support the families, support the parents, understand sick policies have to be different. It has to be. Employers should already be doing that. They should already be having a no symptom policy. I mean, that's my opinion, but the burden's on employers. And this is important. Like, this is the most important thing, is the safety of their employees and the health of their kids. Anyway, that's something I feel pretty strongly about. I'm glad she brought the question up because I think it's an important topic of conversation. I don't think it's a school's burden to solve, but I hope that employers are listening and thinking, how can we reevaluate how we do business so that we can support parents and their kids? We don't live in a big city. We live in a 3,000 person, neighborhood, basically. Anyway.
The public would just like you to identify yourself before you speak, please.
Sure. Okay. Sarah, back with Sarah Holmgren. I think, follow up that we're even looking at our own healthcare, our own board policy for employees and how that will look if they do have a symptom and what those requirements are. So if employers out there are wondering what they should or would like some rough draft guidance, then we'd be happy to share what we're going to be doing at the school district for staff. So, a couple other comments or questions Katie had about the post office long lines due to staff reduction and waiting in line at the grocery store for up to 2 hours. And again, I think that kind of goes with the comments we've already addressed, that this is an employer responsibility community-wide. It's not a burden that the school district needs to work on. I just don't think that it's the district's responsibility to be responsible for how long lines may or may not be in the community. Deposit your paycheck by electronic means. Waiting at the hardware store, I know it's a hassle, but I'm already waiting until, it is what it is. It's not going to last forever. And I don't like it, but I don't feel the district is responsible for reducing those lines. I think it's like Meg said, it's something the employers hopefully will take this on. So, the next question was, what direction would you give single, solo parents or dual working families having to choose between a job and teaching their children? If they're lucky enough to find childcare, how will those childcare providers be able to assist students with their home, with their classrooms? Anybody want to pipe in? Katie? No?
I think I can touch on the childcare question, I guess.
Katie's going to speak.
Oh, yeah, that's Kate Holmland. Your child care centers are running tight. Yeah, we got wait lists. Even before COVID, child care centers were helping educate your children. So, yeah, the school district cannot compel our centers to teach certain curriculum. They can't do this. Eric and I have had this chat already. But child care centers absolutely support what happens in this school district. We try our best to enrich curriculum in developmentally appropriate ways that our staff at whatever facility feel comfortable doing. We as early educators outside of the school also have training in child development, early childhood education, a lot of similar training to our school district educators. We are already supporting the learning outside of school time. We are. So we'll just keep doing our thing because we love kids and we love watching them grow and we love helping them learn and guiding them through that process. Because it is really exciting. But it is what we've always been doing.
Heather would like to speak.
Go ahead, Heather.
All right. We have been working, so this is Katie Holmlin and Mike Lynn Coyle and Charlay and Jessica. We and Barb Stelz and Joni Johnson and Liz Cabrera have been working extremely hard on trying to figure out what, you know, how can we work together to figure this out? And so we have been meeting, and we've been meeting quite frequently. We actually have another meeting tomorrow. We are coming out with a plan. There will be a survey that goes out tomorrow as well. Part of that survey is, do you need childcare and do you need financial assistance? And we are looking at resources. We're also in the, we are going to go and ask the borough for money, the Alaska CARES Act money, so that we can figure out what we're going to do. What are we going to do as a community? And so we had pulled together, and this is a big issue. This is huge for Petersburg, and it is on our radar, and we are hopefully going to have some answers for everybody in regards to childcare, single parenting. Where are you going to find these financial resources? And can the borough help us with funding some of this and taking burden off of parents?
I'll touch on the childcare cost note too. Had a great meeting outside with a couple wonderful advocates, and we have a really great start to helping families that need assistance with this. And we have some really great plans. We've got the right team in place, and we are going to be starting to draft some letters, and we are going to start pooling our energy because it is an issue. This is a huge issue. It was a huge issue before COVID. COVID made it worse. This is where, again, it's not necessarily the school district's burden to fix it. Heather has jumped in with both feet saying, I am ready to help work alongside of you to remedy this issue. She does not need to be doing this. There's 50 million other things she could be doing. And she knows how important quality childcare is during out of school time. So we are coming up with a plan to help as many families as we can because childcare is expensive. It is important and it should not be a burden to families. It should be something that is exciting for kids to go to after school or before school for our elementary kids. So we have another meeting tomorrow. It'll be exciting to break it down with the other care providers and start getting the ball rolling on this one.
So this is Sarah, and I think that would probably be something some of the parents that are truly concerned about what their prospects are for childcare to be part of that conversation.
Absolutely.
Myself, I've talked to a few different friends. You know, we're discussing the fact of keeping our children, hopefully, if they're in the same classroom, you know, similar bubbles, so that if we are have to close our doors, whether because I'm self-employed, whether I need to be home or they need to be home, or I take Mondays, you take Tuesdays, you take Wednesdays, you take Thursdays, that kind of a thing. So our employers, myself, or whether my friend who's employed, they are only missing maybe one day of school. Again, it's a solution I'm coming up with personally. I am not coming to the school and asking the school to solve my potential dilemma. Can the school be involved in that conversation? Yes, absolutely. But I worry about Heather being burdened. Like you said, she has 5 million other things that are school education related. So I just don't think this is a district responsibility, and when we're dealing with so many more additional responsibilities because of COVID, this is just one more. We didn't solve it before when they got out at 2:45 every day. They're getting out 2.5 hours earlier, and it sounds like a few community members want us to solve it, and I just don't think that 2.5 hours it doesn't shift to us automatically. That's just my own personal opinion, though.
Outside of the, this is Katie again, outside of the district, though, outside of my school board cap, child care facility, we are working on this problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have child care concerns, reach out to a child care provider, reach out and ask what our plan is so far, reach out and ask how you can be a part of that conversation, because we will want community input. We're still early on in this whole planning phase, really, because we had no idea. We were waiting for the school. We had no clue what was happening. But you can reach out to child care providers about this issue, because it's a child care issue.
Thanks, Katie.
This is Cheryl. I don't know if it's necessarily the 2 hours after. I think it's the AM, PM. What are you going to, I mean, one kid goes to the AM, one, I mean, there's families that, oh, well, now my kid has to sit there if they can't find childcare to make sure, hopefully, they get to school. I don't think it's necessarily just 2 hours after school. I think it's AM, PM. You have two different schedules.
And this is where Heather is, this is Katie. This is where Heather is working with childcare. This is something we're talking about tomorrow. We're coming with our hopeful, we're going to enroll these kids list, and we're going to start hopefully walking through that process and trying to keep those kids also cohorted as best we can. And there's certain programs where it works out best if all of their kids happen to go to the morning session of school. Great. If that's what works and the school is willing to make it work, that's a partnership. That's what should be happening, because education should be a community endeavor. And Heather is facilitating these conversations already, and there are some creative solutions happening, I think. I don't know that it will help everyone, because childcare is limited in this entire country. This is not just a Petersburg problem. Childcare is limited. But we're doing the best we can. We're working on it. Lots of meetings.
The next question is, what is the district's plan to incorporate students back into a Common Core curriculum after they've been homeschooled without Common Core? And I think that probably will remain unchanged. It's the same we've always done. When a homeschooled student begins public school, they're assessed, evaluated, and if additional support is needed, provided. I don't think that's going to just be, you know, we might have more students homeschooling, so that might be more of a, you know, a bigger task when they do come back to public school, but I would assume it's going to be the same. This is Sarah talking again, sorry. Number eight was, what are there specific disciplinary actions for children who do not comply with the masking rules? I don't know for sure, and I think that's probably a conversation with the staff, but it would be similar to any other rule of reminding a child. I mean, I, you know,
yeah.
When they're getting off task, or you need them to do something, or
yep, encouragement and providing support for that, and yeah, hopefully not having it be a huge battle in that sense. You know, we know that this is a huge change. We didn't, again, teachers aren't excited about wearing masks either all day long. We've been experimenting with a lot of different kinds of masks and things this summer with summer school. We've been doing a dry run with a lot of this, just practicing how it might work and helping the kids, and the kids are doing great, by the way. I just want to say that. The kids are doing great this summer, and the teachers are too, and we've been laughing about some of the masks that they're wearing. We found some that are for people who are hard of hearing, and they have they're clear, and, you know, we just are trying to have fun with it a little bit. So it's not what anybody really asked for, and we understand that. So, yeah.
This is Cheryl. So there is no disciplinary for not wearing a mask? Or how many times are you going to have a teacher remind a student to wear a mask? And when does it get to where it's stopping the education of that kid because you keep asking for them to wear the mask?
Mm-hmm. I would say that it's going to be, that would be a case-by-case kind of basis, just like any other discipline. You know, a lot of districts, I mean, what kind of the guidance we've received is, you know, it's kind of in that, is it a defiance thing? Is it a Is it a behavior in that sense, or is it actually a kid who's genuinely just like, I need a break? And that's a whole different issue. I mean, if a kid is literally just like, I need a break, like it's, and that's what's happening now with our kids in summer school, you know, they're like, I just need, you know, like, sure, go over here. You know, it's fine. It's okay. But if people are kind of deliberately trying to, you know, it, I would say it falls into that sort of defiance category, you know, tiered kind of thing. I don't think we want it to be a punitive, negative all the time kind of thing, but so that's why we're going to try to work with it, you know, from the beginning with those smaller groups and provide support for it and encouragement. And we know that it's not ideal, it's not what everybody wants to do. So
this is Cheryl again, just because I've had people. So I mean, because there could be one teacher that is very adamant you wear that mask, other teachers say, oh no, you're okay.
Right.
So where is, how does that,
right?
I mean, do you sit there in the, when they're sitting at their table, at their desk, do they have to wear their mask? Or is it just when they get up and move around? Because there's two, I mean.
Yeah, K-5 has a little, I would say K-2, even K-3, we're talking about trying to be, you know, as practical as possible with those younger children, helping them build up to things a little bit more. As it goes up, though, as we know, as we're learning from, you know, the guidance that continues to come out and the information around COVID, that, you know, kids do test positive. Kids, they are finding out more information about transmission rates. And of course, as kids get older, the transmission rates are the same as an adult, you know. So it's really the high school is that, you know, right now that's what Mr. Dormer has put in, and we've talked a lot about it, is 6-12 is, you know, masking. So, I mean, are there breaks? Are there opportunities within that? Yeah, but I think that's why we're saying we don't want it to be too, like you say, one class is this way and one class is this way. That's the reason for it to be more consistent across and have sort of one expectation, even though that's hard. That's hard. And we know that's hard. So we want to make that, we don't want to have it be, you know, you walk in your room in one room and everybody takes them off, and you walk in here in the other, and that's
right.
Not helpful.
So this is Cheryl again. I know that it's most of the comments that we've been hearing, I believe it's more for the fifth through K through five.
Mm-hmm.
They're concerned. Because
yeah.
I wouldn't want to wear a mask all day long.
Yeah.
I don't. So
I know it's hard. This whole thing is hard. And I guess what I would say is that, you know, conversations I've had with other districts who, I mean, like we've done, been doing our start with, you know, our kind of test runs with our summer school. And those are a couple hour sessions at a time. And the kids are doing great. Talking with other districts and how it's going with kids, you know, you practice wearing them a little bit more each day, and you kind of get more used to it. And they're, you know, I think we have to always be careful about us as adults knowing, yeah, it's not fun to start with. And again, we're not excited about it. I'm not a dentist or a doctor looking at Jay. I mean, you know, just that I didn't ask for that either. But I think we're just going to have to do our best to encourage that. And know that a five-year-old, there's going to be things that are going to happen with a five-year-old that are different than a fifth grader, that are different than a 17-year-old. And so we're also trying to be realistic and know that we do understand the developmental level of, you know, a six-year-old when they come in, and that they may need a little more encouragement and whatever, but no, we're not going to be like putting them on the guillotine.
So everything is a learning curve, and things are,
yeah,
things change all the time.
Yeah. And I guess that's what why I would say that part of, and again, it's our recommendation about how and why to start with these smaller, shorter amounts of time. That's part of that as well. If you're talking about elementary kids, looking at that, a 3-hour shot of time, but that's even more than that, because there's could be busing, or, you know, you're going to get into the building. So, you know, that's another comment, I guess, to make about that starting with a little bit of less time, especially for those younger kids. So just something to consider.
This is Katie again. Try to put a somewhat positive spin on the masking issue and taking breaks. The early educator in me is like, what a great opportunity for kids to learn to register their own sensory input and then advocate for themselves and learn to say, you know what, this is making me uncomfortable, I need to take a break. Like, that's a huge skill. So yeah, it's uncomfortable. They're not super great. I'm not super comfortable in them as a severe asthmatic, but here I am wearing it because I am making the choice to do so because I respect all of you. But for kids to be able to recognize I'm getting uncomfortable or I'm too hot, my throat hurts, whatever it is, and then being able to ask their teacher if it is okay for them to take a break is a huge, huge skill. And I think that opportunity should not be dismissed too. Even though, yeah, it's uncomfortable, it's an opportunity, I think.
This is Megan. I have additional math questions. Are we talking math? Like, is this, I guess I want to clarify how the flow of the meeting and the agenda, because I have some other specific questions, and I wonder, do I ask them now or wait until, are we going to address
mapping
specifically?
Math, I would think.
Okay, this is for secondary. I asked this before, but the plan for secondary says there's going to be built-in breaks for masks, and I'd like to know exactly what that looks like. How are breaks built in? Is it indoors? Is it outdoors? And then I have some follow-up questions. So for you, or if Rick's on, or whoever can answer that for secondary.
Mr. Dormer? You on?
There we go. Hi, everyone. Good evening. Thank you, Megan, for the questions on masking. Again, we will require students to mask during the school day. You know, we'll have open campus for the high school still. And so that'll be them. Many of them, I assume, will leave the building, and I assume there'll be a mask break there. We haven't worked out details with staff in my mind. Obviously, we continue to have that second chance breakfast at 9 o'clock after first period and before second period starts. So we'll be working with staff once they return back to think about, obviously they're not gonna be able to eat breakfast and wear a mask, and that's a great time for the first mask break. I'd like to talk with teachers about what a mask break is during those two blocks. They're 85 minute blocks back to back after that, starting at 9:30 and going till 12:30. So we're kind of talking with teachers what kind of that break stands, as well as, you know, mindfulness and stretch breaks during that. Again, you've got lunch, and then we just have one period after the day that's a shorter block of time. So you see, we kind of have these staggered spots where a mask break makes sense, what they look like. We haven't exactly determined yet. I don't know if they're going to walk kids outside or if they're going to have them sit 6 feet apart and everyone kind of take their space and take a break. We haven't worked out the details yet, but that's kind of the time frame of it throughout our day. Does that help?
So this is Megan again. And to be clear, I don't want to give the impression that I'm disputing masks or pro mask or anything. I've received this feedback, as well as I have these questions myself.
Sure.
So if just logistically, from like the infection control standpoint, if we're saying wear the mask most of the time, and during these times, go ahead and indoors take the mask off. From an infection control standpoint, does that negate the have we now contaminated this potential space, the air, the place in front of us?
Yeah.
And I like the idea of breaks. I want this all to work in my mind. Like, won't it be great if the kids are wearing a mask that controls infection? They go ahead, take it off, take a quick break, put it back on. But realistically, what are we hearing about infection control? Is that effective?
Well, in the meetings I'm in meetings every week at different times with Dr. Zink, Dr. Olson, Dr. McLaughlin, different local medical professionals too. And what Dr. Zink talks a lot about is just that the duration as well. I mean, the duration of time when masks are off, and what that sort of the aerosolization or buildup in a room. So even the whole conversation about 80% of the people wearing them has an impact versus, you know, if 5% of the people are wearing them, that whole kind of thing as far as viral loads in a room. We have ordered fans for every room. We will be spending money on windows being open and doors being open. Those are all recommendations that have come, CDC guidance that's come with that. Our fabulous new maintenance director here, Mr. Johnson, has done a lot of research on the filters, the filtration system that we have, the how many more times we should be looking at filters and what that looks like in our system. We do have a really high functioning HVAC system in our district, which is good. All the years of work and maintenance and care that have gone into those things are really paying off for us now. So it's a good question.
Yeah. And just the overall flow of what a classroom looks like, Megan and the board and people listening, you know, to think that my imagining a mask break of them, they need to sit 6 feet apart. They need to be facing forward, you know, but as you walk through a class for a time, one of the best reasons to have masks is to allow a little bit. So everyone is not rigidly sitting, you know, full 6 feet, not looking at each other, watching their voices. It allows them to be a little bit more, they can turn and talk with people, still maintaining distance. We've talked about our chemistry lab, about they're going to need to get up and walk around the room to do some labs. So masking allows that to happen safer. And so obviously during mask breaks, we're going to maximize and use all the things that air handling and stuff that the superintendent said.
This is Jay Lister. What type of filters do we have, and do we have HIPAA filtration right now?
So this is Ralph Johnston. So currently we have MERV 7 filtration, and we have purchased MERV 9, but wing tape, they perform at MERV 11 standards. So, and those are going to be installed by the vendor, hopefully by like the end of next week or the week after.
And that's a recommended level.
Okay.
Yes, that's a recommended level. And again, we're fortunate because we already had talked about the filters even last year. You remember that, just the new filters themselves. And so the system can handle those. Yes.
Does that have enough air exchange to be meet the recommended?
So what we'll do is we'll increase the system, the duration hours in our DDC. So instead of having on off, we'll have the system run continuously with one or two windows open with fans exhausting the air out of the classrooms. So we'll get, you know, a probably 25% increase in air exchange. So which should reduce the viral load in each classroom. So there are a couple of classrooms that are, I don't know, problematic maybe because there's no windows, but some of the classrooms that have no windows have independent exhaust systems. So which is what we're looking at also.
Would it help to have extra HIP or smaller HIP filtration filters in the rooms themselves, or would it be unnecessary?
They didn't recommend that necessarily for the rooms that had access to those, the right kind of filtration. I think we would potentially look at that maybe if they don't have their own air handler in a couple of the spaces in the middle high school that don't have windows. If we can't get a good read on that, that would probably be something we could research.
Okay.
Or we have looked at.
They have been using the window fans in the summer school classrooms, and you can actually feel the air moving through the room better than with the windows closed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Megan again. One more thing, a little follow up to something Katie touched on about self advocacy. I think we have a lot of students who, for one reason or another, will struggle with that. And I am worried about that. I see that coming out in behaviors versus, you know, kid outright asking. I know teachers do this stuff anyway, regardless of what it is. Some kids don't like their t-shirt touching them, let alone a mask. But I'm thinking about those kiddos that are struggling, they're trying. I think in middle high school, to be honest, I know your world is little guys. I'm thinking about the big guys that are having the exact same struggle and can't advocate for themselves or won't. So I'm worried about, I'm just worried about what that looks like and the support that they need from that. So I'm sure that our teachers will be mindful of that, but I think it's something that needs a, you know, particular level of attention.
I totally agree with you. And I actually think that we talk a lot about the young kids needing a lot of that time and instruction and modeling and all those kinds of things. And I agree with you that all of us as older people too, you know, we have more things set in our minds actually. So it's, we have to have good conversations and planning for that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. This is Cheryl again. I just think that the K through five, I think they need to know that they can ask to have a break. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure the teachers will explain if you need time. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
And then I have a question for Rick. For the safety and masking protocols, it says masking while moving. And then it says students will wear a mask in their classroom. Mm-hmm. Do they have to wear a mask while they're sitting? I mean, you kind of touched on that a little bit, but you can say, can you say yes or no? Because it's still kind of.
I think it's yes.
It's yes. Yeah. They need to mask in the classrooms. And a lot of good questions about the masking protocols. And that's a really nice benefit of, you know, our PBS setup where we teach these mini lessons, and a nice advantage of starting in yellow, where in the second, you know, only having half the kids in and out those first beginning of the school year. So we can practice with this, talk through kids, whether it's self-advocacy, it's proper behaviors, it's when and what does a mask break look like. And when is it, you know, absolutely essential getting that mask back on properly. A lot of that stuff will be a lot easier to teach in smaller groups, both for teachers to get used to it and for students to understand the processes.
Well, I think you need to put in there that mask will be worn at all times instead of while moving and in a classroom. I think you needed to say it better.
Yeah, and I think where we are with these is these are drafts. I mean, those things are there, and again,
they're
like,
already changed them.
Oh yeah, no, they're already, they will be. I mean, that's exactly where we are, because those protocols have to be really fleshed out when the teachers come back on site too, so that we actually get the lessons set and the information, you know, so those draft parts of those they're definitely still in motion for sure.
Well, this is Cheryl again. As a parent, it make me quite, well, it says only while they're moving and in their class and in moving in their classroom,
right.
But it doesn't specify sitting down.
Right, right.
So that's why I said that.
Yeah, no, it's good.
We have questions.
Good question.
And this is Megan. I think that's a good point, because especially, well, a lot of kids will focus in mm-hmm. on that
yeah.
and say, you know, there's a gap there, and they'll take advantage of it. So
yeah.
If we could just make a note to strike that language and change it to all the time,
yep.
So that it's really clear.
Yep.
So I know these kinds of children who will say, you know, you didn't say exactly, so I didn't do exactly. So.
Very true.
Yeah, I have a question too about kind of touching on the mask while moving, but also like our social or physical distancing. What happens when we have our fire drill?
We have to write plans for those as well. That's actually one of the things we have.
Or like, heaven forbid, like a real fire.
Yes.
I mean, obviously your priority is to get out of the building, I suppose. But
we have to write.
Do you have to do class by class fire drills?
Specific plans for what that looks like too.
That's fun. Okay.
There's a plan for everything.
Yeah, I figured there would be.
500,000 mitigation plans for everything that has nothing to do with reading.
And you better memorize them. Sorry, that was said in sarcasm.
This is Sarah. I will add talking about children and divulging family situations. My youngest has been in summer school all summer. She took it, you know, she was part of the reading program for a month in June, had a week off in July, and was back into summer school and has been going to summer school, which is 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. She just turned eight in June. She's young for her class. And I know this is not a representation of every student, but she embraced it. It was just, oh, well, this is what we do. Okay, this is what we do. And maybe it's because she's a girl and she's used to having things in her hair. I don't know, you know, that she's used to stuff in and around her, but she just, I guess in our own home, we just said, well, this is what we're doing now. And it was, oh, okay. And she doesn't have, you know, sensory issues or anything like that, that I know other children might have that challenge. But I guess parents that are listening, I think a lot of it has to do with our own attitude and how our kids will view what the rules are. And we are a rule-following family, as you can imagine. But it was just one of those, this is what we have to do for now. Okay. And, yeah, we went out and bought some fun masks to make it more fun. and it's, she's making it through. I have not heard her complain once. Actually, what happened, we got to school and there was a panic because she had forgotten her mask. So we turned around and we went home and grabbed it. So I think kids will adapt. They will, it will become second nature to them at some point. And I think, you know, we all have concerns about it, but I also think, I really think, you know, think about how adaptable our kids are now. And just, that's my two cents. The next question she had had was understanding the Smart Start is guidelines issued by the state. And I can understand the state issuing guidelines versus hard and fast mandates because Anchorage School District is completely different than CAKES, which is completely different than ours, you know. And that there are guides for the district, but not mandates. Why is our district treating these guidelines as non-negotiable? And I think that kind of goes in line with another question we had from another parent, which kind of, I think, falls in a similar vein, maybe, is why are daycares, child care facilities enforcing things or are operating in a different capacity than the school? And I guess I would say that, although I do believe Petersburg has done a great job at keeping COVID at bay, we have 450 students in our district, 450 plus 80 staff. So we're talking over 500 people coming into these buildings if we were to open the doors wide open. That doesn't take into account that each one of those people have family members that they're exposed to on a daily basis. That also, in essence, my child is bringing my germs to school as well. No other facility in our town has over 500 people with the expectation of dissenting on three buildings all at once. And no other facility, childcare included, has that volume of children coming in to their doors. So, you know, you look at childcare facility, they have, what are their limits? 10 to a room or 12 to a room? You know, that's what we're trying to emulate by half days is cutting those classrooms down to what childcare facilities are doing so that we can control a potential spread or control the environment and the protocols to get you into the building. And if things go well there, then you expand from there. We have to hire six, am I right? Six teachers?
Well, we're looking at three, we've posted for three.
Three, okay. It's also just a function of bodies, adult bodies to be able to control this environment. So logistically, to open three schools with safe cleaning protocols is going to be challenging at best. And just try to stand back and envision children arriving, keeping them distance from each other, checking symptoms, and on top of that, all the usual craziness of just the first day of school that under normal circumstances. We have to start slow to figure out all the logistics in getting people safely into the building and moving within each building. And I don't think we all realize how difficult opening the doors are just getting the kids inside into their classrooms, whether it's the middle school. The high school may go a little bit easier because they're just older in grade school. But all at the same time, following those protocols. So by starting with fewer children in the building on a given day, it could make it easier. Now, childcare, again, you've got 10 kids in a classroom, 10 kids in that classroom, maybe 12. You're not talking 22 to 25 kids in a classroom all coming into the building at once. Childcare, you get dropped off at different times, or maybe it's similar within a half an hour period. It's been a long time since I had a child in preschool or childcare. But I just think they're two very different balls of wax. They're not the same. And I don't know, that's, again, Sarah, one board member's opinion, but that's where I see the differences in childcare versus school district is its sheer volume of the bodies coming into the building. Anybody else want to?
This is Jay Lister. I think we don't know what we don't know yet. We don't know what's going to happen this fall when all these schools open back up.
Yeah.
You know, if obstacles is just going to go ballistic or if it's going to not be that big a deal, but we, I guess we don't know.
Yeah.
And we got to be a little bit cautious till we kind of
figure that out.
And to that, do we have numbers between when we switch from green, yellow, and red, and how often are we evaluating those?
So I can speak to that when we do go through the plan itself too. But we actually just had another meeting today with Carl and the community EOC talking about the community protection plan and how we fit into that, because we need to be modeling things together, looking at what community transmission might look like, or cases in a community, but how those might impact in a school, and talking with the medical professionals. There's conversation about looking at what is happening in the school buildings themselves. So we can do that. I mean, whoever asked that question, that's right. We set those within some parameters with some local guidance, you know, as well. Like we can't say, well, we can have 20 cases and we're going to still, you know, we need to be dovetailing, but we also know that, you know, the hospital is going to have different tolerance levels than, you know, say the school, or being able to look at the high school if there are cases in the high school, for example, and looking at the tracing or whatever, all those things that have to happen. If that's where it is, then that really shouldn't have a huge impact on the other building, you know. So that's another factor of staffing and looking at the way that things have to be set up, trying to keep the buildings somewhat separate. That's been another big conversation, talking about things like the specialists, or even Alice's question about PE. Things are going to look different. We can't have one teacher that sees 400 kids a day, because if, heaven forbid, something happens or some, you know, whatever that looks like, that person has now been around 400 kids. So even just the scheduling in general, things will still be offered. We're encouraging teachers to get their kids outside, and we're encouraging teachers to take advantage of things that are all not cooped up in a room, and movement and, you know, that sort of thing. But things will look different in that sense, you know, because of that. So we don't have absolute numbers. We are working with the group to look at what Ketchikan's got a pretty extensive community protective plan, and they're doing the same kind of work. It's on their borough, or are they a borough? I don't know. Anyway, site, I have a copy of it. And then we're trying to model after that. What does that mean? And does it mean within the building? We don't necessarily need to be impacted by cases that happen, like the two that happened on the boat, you know, a few weeks ago. That has really nothing to do with us. And so we wouldn't do anything with that. You know, two cases in the community for that don't really have anything to do with us. So four cases in the high school, that's probably going to have an impact, you know, on what we're doing. So we're trying to create those hard and fast numbers with things that are not hard and fast. Is it three? Is it three in one building? Is it five in a district? You know what I'm saying? So that's what we've been struggling with in that sense. So
how often are you going to be reevaluating what level we're at?
Every week, probably.
Once a week? Okay.
I mean, I would say that's what the EOC is doing. You know, I'm in those meetings every week. And as we're trying to hone that down for the, or not, I'm not trying to hone it down for the community. I'm trying to do my part within that piece. But yeah.
This is Cheryl. I think that the number of cases would also depend on, well, my brother's in this school.
Right.
I have a family member in the other school.
Yep.
So that makes it can make a big difference.
It can make a big difference. And that's kind of what Aaron Michael had said from Public Health, was the same thing. It's hard to put the number that's just a straight up number, because right. It could be that exactly what you're saying. There's an impact within that, or somebody in a home who ends up that's another close contact that tests positive. I'll tell you guys more about that, or talk more about that too. But, you know, we're impacted by all of those public health mandates in that sense, as far as quarantining and all that sort of thing too. So
this is Megan. I have two comments on that. I think early on in this whole thing, the borough might have even attempted to use numbers. Like I remember there was a lot of like, when this happens, this happens. And then when that happened, everyone was sort of like, oh, but wait, we weren't taking in all these variables. So, you know, A plus B doesn't equal 3. You know, yeah. I mean, like, it doesn't. So yeah. I think definite numbers are hard to look at. But as far as how often it gets evaluated, I would hope that would happen even in less than a week if some, you know, I'm assuming that it's going to be very dynamic and fluid. And
yes.
If suddenly one household, everybody yep. is sick, then, or everybody tests positive, then that would change things immediately.
Yeah. And there are definitely protocols within that too, as far as what happens for 24 hours or 72 hours. There's some public yep. health mandates or
Yeah.
And that one episode could move us into a different category instantly versus.
Right. And maybe not for weeks and weeks at a time, but maybe for 5 days or, you know.
Right,
that
exactly.
Sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I will say. This is Sarah. I noticed, like I was reading what other school districts have come up with or proposed, and Prince Wales Island is proposing something similar. We're looking at is a starting in the yellow zone, because you can always step back, but getting everybody in practice and getting everybody used to a certain level, and then they're going to reevaluate in 4 weeks with the assumption that there are no cases on their island. And so I kind of liked that idea of, like, let's get us used to a certain thing. And if 4 weeks from now things are looking, and we have enough staff member and space and all those things, then school may look very different a month from now.
Yeah.
And maybe more livable or more, you know, on a daily basis. But I thought, you know, anyway.
Yeah. So you have, this is Megan again. We're going to talk about that specifically, like what, if as long as we continue with no cases, we have a day
what things might look like,
where mm-hmm. we might say, okay, we've done well, now we can.
Let's
so
try.
Families listening can
yeah.
sort of say, okay, we understand this is going to last
yeah.
4 weeks, then we can, okay, we'll
yeah.
talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay, I won't jump the gun then.
Okay.
Heidi Cabral, who is a summer school teacher, has texted in a comment that she would like read.
Okay.
I have been teaching summer school for the past 2 weeks. I have been following cues from the students and taking them outside for a lot of our instruction and to take a break of masks. The students come in with a mask. They are allowed to take them off when they are at their seat and 6 feet apart. The students have been amazing, and I have loved my time with them. I do need to make a lot of reminders, but none of them seem to mind the reminders and do not fight me. I have a fan in my room at the window. This will be a work in progress, and it is not perfect. Not all my students will be able to mask, and we will work with those students.
Yep.
And for those, this is Sarah, for those that are you know, familiar with every single teacher we have in the district, Heidi Cabral is our special ed teacher in the elementary school.
Yep.
The 12th question Katie had, I think kind of, we just kind of spoke about it, which was, you know, where are our zones and when would we move between red and yellow or green? So, why is our school district taking such a strict stance when other communities in Southeast Alaska who do have a legitimate caseload are opening their doors to students? And I think another person who wrote in asked, suggested that we should be like Ketchikan and be 5 days a week and so forth. But I do want to remind, at least when I was looking at Ketchikan's program, they're masked from age 3 and older, all the way through 12th grade, and it's masked all the time. So that's how Ketchikan's dealing with having it wide open, is that every single child has to be masked from the age of 3 and up. So they must have a preschool program that I'm just not unaware of. So that's how they're dealing with it. And again, it's another one of those, they've got a lot of students and maybe they have the space for it so they can spread them out, because again, it talks about having cohorts and small classrooms and all the things that we're trying to do as well. We're not saying that we're not going to move to that. It's just, we need to start smaller because we are smaller and we don't have enough people. But I also think we are also in a position that we may be more flexible because we're a smaller district, but they're going to have 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds in their preschool program being masked the whole time. So it's not, I guess when people are comparing our district to other districts, it's not all apples to apples. You know, you have to look at the entire program and be realistic about it. But it also, this is my own personal feeling, again, Sarah, it comes down to keeping our staff and students in our case. I, for one, could not vote to open the school wide open without limited protocols, or even if one staff member or a child dies because of the virus and they contracted at school, because one life or more is not worth the discomfort, childcare planning, disruption to my business and community concessions. There are families with health issues and serious risks that are in both our student body as well as our staff, and telling them that they need to just deal with it, which is not what Katie said at all. I don't want to miss it, but I have had people say that to me on the street. Well, they just need to deal with it. I can't. I think it's unreasonable, and it's assuming the district is somehow responsible for this. I can't. One life is not worth this for me. That's my own personal belief. And as a board member, I don't think I could comfortably live with myself if I said, throw caution to the wind, it's not that big a deal, Petersburg, let's just do it. I just couldn't do it. And anyway. And the half-day class, I actually called a few teachers. I know they're not on contract. They're supposed to be trying to enjoy their summer. And I asked them what their personal thoughts were. And a few, the three that I did talk to said, you know, the advantage of half-time, a half-school day, is I have half the students. And that means I can tailor my education plans for them even more because I have fewer students. And because of that, my afternoon students come in and I'm teaching the same curriculum in the afternoon to a different set of kids. So my prep for having to figure out my lesson plans may be less. So that gives me time to be more individualistic with those children. And I can pay attention to them more clearly. They said, in an average day for, you know, a period of time, you're looking at fewer time with each individual student. And so you're increasing that almost twice by having a half day. Do I want to see us continue on a half day? No, of course, ideally, it would be great that everybody's full time. But I do think we're going to be pleasantly surprised at how much the kids are able to learn and accomplish, even in a half day scenario, even if it's only for a month or two, you know. Anybody else want to?
This is Katie. On that note, too, that slow start with smaller groups, especially after time out of the school building. Yeah, our teachers were still absolutely providing instruction in a very different way. But we know that there were families that chose not to participate in the spring. And so having that slow start back will really give teachers a chance to like assess their students' needs so that they can craft their plans to be individual learners and to teach towards them. And I just, as a teacher, that the teacher side of me is like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, this is ideally all class sizes should only be 10 kids in a perfect world anyway. I think any teacher would jump at that opportunity. And so I know parents and families are really worried about the lack of education, but the amount that they're going to get because of having more focused instruction and more time directly with their teacher, I don't think that they are going to be missing out. They will likely get more out of this deal because it will be more focused.
And Sarah, since coming on, we had someone who did want to speak. Did you want to roll back up to comment?
I think if everybody's comfortable with that, I did just get a text from someone that had a question too. I'm not sure I'll be able to answer it, but
can I do this? This is Cheryl. I think that a lot of what I've heard is it's not the in school time that it's more of the virtual learning that they're all concerned about.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. a lot of them are not going to be there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how are they going to?
Yeah. And that's where we have
that's
creative.
A huge.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a lot of the problem.
I totally hear that. I get that. And I think Heather and I have had a lot of conversations about that too. And I think we have to be very flexible in knowing that the off time doesn't have to just, quote unquote, be through technology. I think we have to be
handout.
Creative, well, or STEM kits.
Something.
Or, I mean, there's a lot of different options there, I think. And then again, even if it's working with childcare providers or family members or pods of people who are working with kids, I think we have to help. We have to be very flexible in what's going to work for students and families in those situations, especially for elementary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there.
Yep.
I
would agree with you. The big, big concern. We
I mean, it's a concern for me. I don't have any kids in school.
Yep. Totally agree.
This is Katie again. Eric and I had a chat the other day, and we had mentioned that out of school time learning too, because I have done a tutorial on the virtual academy. I sat on a Saturday morning and watched the video that Erica sent me. It was 2 hours. I loved it. Awesome program. I still don't like virtual learning because it's just, I zone out. I can't do it.
Inside.
Yeah. Give me a tree. I'm good. But we had this chat about trying to find flexible and creative, enriching opportunities for kids in the hope that maybe we can get the school year rolling, but then maybe we have like a joint little task force or committee to come up with some more of these things and to help give other community members or parents the tools to provide enriching opportunities for kids. So it'd be super fun to be on, you know, to brainstorm in that way.
This is Megan. I hope we continue to talk more about this. I have one child left in elementary school. Hallelujah. And I say hallelujah because yeah, that was the hardest kid to educate. And I just kind of going back to what Cheryl said, and we don't have to necessarily answer this now, but I want to make sure that I say what I'm thinking right now before I forget. My hope in this plan, I hear what you're saying, Katie. I don't want to just come right out, but it's going to come right out like I just disagree with you. I'm sorry, but my concern is for my 8-year-old, and I actually can be at home. I don't know how long that'll last, but I'm not providing her any enriching activities during the school day when she's not physically in school. I am relying on the school to do all of the core that she needs. She is not coming home to me, and we're not doing a science project. It's not happening in my house. It's just not. We're not logging on. We're not watching videos. We're not doing anything extra. That was a choice our family made. I think there are other people who had to make that choice for a multitude of reasons, be it work or they're just tapped out or stress or whatever. So it doesn't have to be answered now, but we need to come back to this, like for elementary, even if we only are doing a month of this slow rollout, for elementary kids, but particularly K-3, mm-hmm. are they going to get enough at school? Because when you're talking about, you know, childcare, I get that childcare is doing all these things, but if we have other expectations of K-3 to continue their core learning outside of school, and to be honest with you, I can't fully wrap my head around without hearing Heather talk about what the plan looks like, you know, so I don't fully understand it yet. I'm looking forward to hearing that. Like, I need the auditory part. But we need to be thinking about that some families, K-3, are not supplementing in any way, shape, or form anything outside of the school, their kids' education. It's just the fact of the matter. It's a bummer, but it is what it is. So I think we just need that question answered. It doesn't mean that we have to like try to please people necessarily. You don't have to satisfy the fact that I'm going to make that decision for my kid, but we need to hear the detail of what that looks like at some point tonight.
Can I follow up real quick? Katie again. We're not starting a great debate. Don't worry.
Okay.
I will say, I think anybody that knows me knows that I tend to side on the more non-traditional styles of teaching and learning, especially K-3. I think that it would almost be impossible to go home and say your kid is not learning anything. I think even if you're meaning you don't want assigned tasks sent home, I get that. That's awful. But kids are learning you bake cookies with your kids. You go hunting with your kids. You go on hikes, you're running. I see you doing it. You are teaching your kids. And yeah, it's not like, okay, here's your lesson plan. You're going to get it done. We're going to work through all of these. Let's check our little boxes off. That's not what learning only looks like. And I want families to feel
empowered to take some control of what their kids are learning, because they are teachers. Any adult in your child's life is a teacher. Hopefully they're teaching the right thing. But especially those younger ones, you give them Legos, that's learning, that's math, that's science, that's physics, that's cause and effect relationships, that's so many things, which I know you know, Meg. But I just, it makes me sad when people are, well, I don't know how to teach my kids. And maybe that's just me, like, because I love learning and I love being a part of that process. So maybe I just, something I can't wrap my head around.
This is Megan, and I'm not going to go on and on. I swear it. I think that's not quite what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there are expectations, like, okay, you were in school this 3 hours, and so by tomorrow we want you to have done X, Y, Z. I just think there's a lot of people who will not have been able to accomplish that in the spring. Many of us were like, you know, I was like, hey, you know, if you could like do 30 minutes or 20 or something of ST math, that would be cool. If you can sit next to me with an iPad while I do some work, you know, that might work for some people. They couldn't not even do that. And I can respect that and appreciate it. So we just need to make sure that we're talking about that 3 hour period being as good and enriching as we can, and try not to put too much on parents outside, because I think some of the daycare questions and some of what Katie might have been getting at, and maybe you were getting at, Cheryl, is not necessarily about daycare itself, but how are we going to follow through with this learning stuff if the kid is with a provider and not with a parent who can say, do the ST math, you know, like, oh, is daycare going to say, whip out your iPads, everyone's doing 20 minutes of ST math? So I think that might be what Katie was getting at earlier.
That's the biggest issue.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Sorry.
And now I'm done. I'll wait to hear the plan, and I'm going to be all
optimistic. The plan is flexibility. That's what I would tell you. And that's what I think I was saying initially, that we don't have every detail of that because so many families have such different needs.
Yeah.
And because of their age, it's different than a seventh grader or a junior. And so that is why that has to be, we feel, mapped out based on developmental and grade level, based on family need, and it's probably going to be more individualized. That's what I would tell you.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, this is Cheryl. So for the virtual, because I just had the site, for the K through three, is it recorded?
Yeah.
And can they go back and, like, when their parents are home and do
it? I'm going to show it to you.
Okay, because in here it says if you are not on elementary school plan, it says if you are not on, you are considered absent. But if they can't be on until after their parents come home.
That's why we have to modify.
And then I have another question.
Okay.
For Heather. For first through fifth grade, in person is reading and math, and then virtual is science and social studies. Are you going to mix that up? Because I find it hard to do science and social studies virtual when sometimes you can do it in class. So like maybe 1 week it's a...
Well, and I
think... I know it's a kid, but I'm thinking of stuff.
Yeah.
Parents are too.
They're good questions. No, and there will be lots of integration across that too. And again, I think it's that impactful use of the time when we have them in front of us. What is our most... what is the most impact that we can have in that amount of time? And the thing that was different, I agree with you, Meg, last spring, and I think that's what we're all craving, and we were craving it last spring, is if you could just get your hands on them for a little bit, and you could have that face-to-face, and you could really work with them, and then it becomes more fluid. Mm-hmm. There was the breakdown, because if people couldn't connect, or they felt disconnected from their teacher for whatever reason, it could have been family, you know, whatever, lots of reasons, but... I think that's going to be something else that's also beneficial that we have to remember. We're going to have them in front of us at some point.
Yeah.
And that will be huge. And that's another reason why the elementary was very interested in the, having them every day, even though there's a lot of logistical issues, because they could get their hands and their eyes and their time with them each day. So I think that also might help.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, I think in the spring we were like, I would take anything.
I know, I know. And the teachers felt the same way.
Mary,
I want just to lower with them.
But there's some things that you can do at home, or, you know, or that yeah. a babysitter could even say, like, okay, mom said to do this, and I'm not going to check it. I'm not going to,
sure.
but, like, if you could try yeah. to do it today before mom gets home from work or dad,
yep.
you know, and, you know, mom and dad can we're used to doing 20 minutes of reading or whatever and a little bit in the evening, but I want to
yep.
make sure that that burden is as low as possible.
I agree.
For when we're in green and yellow.
I agree.
I did have one person, a parent, text me, and I'm not sure we can even answer this because that's a question more for the medical center, but he just said, I'm wondering, would COVID testing be required before the beginning of the year, and if not, why?
I can answer some of that.
Yeah. Oh,
I can.
Okay. And just saying that then we would start with an even keel. Everybody would be tested. We would know whether... You know, and I know that's only as good as your next exposure to someone.
Right.
But
so what I can tell you is I have asked about, I do medical center meetings every other day. Have asked that we do, if it's possible, that if staff for sure could have access to, like, if we had any concern at all, because our staff is also under this same symptom-free protocol. If you have a wake up with this, you know, so same thing. So we did talk with the medical center, and I've said, you know, is there any way that we can get on your, move up your priority list as we're coming into the school year, sort of like what the protocols that they have in place for a lot of our county workers right now for those things, you know, keeping that economy moving. And so they know that we would like to be on that list. It's, again, it's a supply issue and it's a time issue. So if it's the rapid test, how many rapid tests, how much supply, it's we're into the same issues that everybody else is with all that too. So they know that we're interested in that, and especially for our staff, because that makes a huge difference. They also are researching, we just heard today from the crew about the saliva testing that they're doing in places, and there's a way that you can get, it takes about 15 minutes to get a result, and they're doing some experimentation with that in other places. So, you know, what that might look like, that would be huge as well. So I think any of those things that we could do, I mean, better than taking temperatures and whatever, which isn't even always the gold standard anymore either. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Erica, I can go ahead and speak to the comment that was before this. This is Heather.
Okay.
So part of the push with the science and social studies, when we first started down this in May, and I was meeting with the Michael Johnson, the Commissioner of Education through the Department of Education. One of the things that people were playing with, they were already making plans in May. They were playing with an AM, PM schedule a little bit. But one of the things that he was pushing was, while your students are in the AM session, what are you doing for those students in PM session? And while those students are in a PM session, what are you doing for those students that are in the AM session? He wants, at the department, they want our learning to happen all day. However, they want this to happen all day. They need these guidelines to be considered, to be put into place. But we have to be teaching two groups at the same time. So that is where the push came from science and social studies, was from the Department of Education. Wrangell is having the same trouble right now, trying to figure out how they're going to do their AM session, but they're still supposed to be teaching those PM session kids at the same time the AM session kids are in-person class. They're finding that they're not having a staff. Thankfully, we were given that money from the borough, and so we have been able to post a few positions. Some of the things that we looked at were, when we were looking at AM PM, is to strictly teach reading, writing, and math in that in-person session. Those are the three things. Without reading and writing and math, where would our kids go? How would we move on to the next grade level? Science and social studies seem to happen all around us at every time. I mean, interactions at the post office, going downtown, going to the grocery store with your parents, cooking cookies, like I think Katie had said, all those interactions involve the science and the math and the social studies. So we were just trying to think of something out of the box. Once I started getting comments via email about times, and then the childcare centers were chiming in of, this isn't going to work. I realized this plan is not going to work for us. So we have to go back to the drawing board. We have to figure out something that we can do, because there were parents that this is overwhelming. It is so overwhelming. And in the spring, it was overwhelming for them. And some kids never got an education in the spring because they just couldn't do it. And no shame on those parents. They just couldn't do it. They're trying to put food on the table. They're trying to keep their family going, and they couldn't make it happen. And so that's what I sit there and think about at night. How can we make this happen? How can we do this? What kind of schedule, what kind of creative thinking, what kind of out of the box thinking that we can do this? I mean, one thing that I've thought of is parent-child activities, a step-by-step of making cookies with your children. And what are they learning? What standards are you teaching them just in that moment? And those are just the kinds of things that we're looking at. And I think that that's a bigger staff discussion, and it's going to be, and I haven't had the staff at my fingertips because we aren't supposed to be working right now. We're all putting in overtime. Our budgets don't include, you know, us working during the summer. So I've really been stingy with their time and what we do need them to do and what we don't need them to do, because we can answer a lot of these questions when they do come back on staff, which is on the 18th of August. I hope that helps in answering some.
Thanks, Heather.
I hope, this is Sarah, I hope we've been able to answer or address some of the questions and concerns. They may not be exactly what, you know, some listeners are hoping for. We have, I know myself, I've had a lot of positive feedback on just almost a relief that there is a plan in the works, and even if it's only half days, that it's like, okay. And then some, you know, very thoughtful, very legitimate and good questions to bring up, both some stuff that we need to take into account, what the community at large needs to plan for and take into account. I think I appreciate all the letters that we have gotten, and some of them really detailing many questions, and specifically, like, I felt the need to address Katie's because she had so many compared to, you know, some of the other letters that had either similar questions or just were just shorter. And I thought, well, we'll see if we can answer a lot of these tonight. I don't know if the next.
We still have one person.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
So we have Drew Arias.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Drew Harris. Thanks for coming back to me here. I was trying to figure out how to raise my hand on this thing earlier and make my comment. I'm not very good at technology here. So I wrote a letter to the administration yesterday. I just kind of want to put it out there as an opinion piece on basically with people that I've had conversations with in the community and just my close circle. So, go ahead and give it a go here. So I'm writing this in hopes to shed some light on what we're all thinking, but not actually saying. I'm writing this as a parent, a member of this community, and what the state says, an essential employee. This is just my opinion of my family, opinion of the majority of the people that I've spoken with, and even opinions of the teachers and aides within the school they seem to be ignoring. I'm not exactly sure where the breakdown in communication has occurred between the school system and the community in general. A couple of surveys were completed regarding the reopening of the schools. The plan is being put in place. Seems as if the voices of parents, staff, committee were not heard, almost as if a plan was already created and the administration was just going through the motions because they had to. My wife and I sat on a video conference and listened and provided feedback. The biggest topics were providing kids with an effective learning environment, allowing the children to socially interact. I understand the school staff has put in a lot of hours to create this curriculum, especially spending your summer off to make sure the children have a safe learning environment. I believe this is a fantastic model that was created, and I applaud you all. You guys did a fantastic job with it. This would work amazing if we were actually experiencing a severe breakout within the community. This is a great backup plan, but should not be the main plan for the community with a few localized cases. There's been an enormous amount of precedence placed on a virus that's barely touched our community. We've all stopped everything at the drop of a dime to protect us from this virus. To what cost? First, our economy, our children's education at the end of the last school year, to now possibly looking at an entire school year of half classroom, half digital learning. I understand this, the virus has become a deadly threat to the nation, but big picture, we should probably create the same curriculum for the yearly flu since it's just a deadly for our children. We are worried so much about a virus in a community that sends our kids off every summer to engage in commercial fishing, the second most dangerous job in America. Additionally, we should worry about just about as much of the underage alcohol and marijuana consumption that plagues our community and how it's enabled by a few select parents. People driving under the influence at this point is more deadly than the virus to our youth. So, like I'm saying, basically, there are so many things that our children are exposed to that are inherently more dangerous than the viruses to our school. I think many parents stand with me and say it needs to be full days until something drastic happens within the community. At this point, it's not broke. Why are we fixing it? It's not even a preventive maintenance measure. I've watched kids all summer in various groups run around together, playing, hugging, wrestling, and just straight up being kids without social distancing, masking. I've witnessed many members of the faculty and school staff engaging in multifamily outings without social distancing, masking. This curriculum is extremely confusing. It's going to add more of a burden with families that cannot be home all day with the kids. And I want it to be known I'm full support of the curriculum, but only if we get to the point where it's actually needed. I just don't want us knee-jerking reaction just to say we did something. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Drew. I don't know if anybody wants to address any of his specific comments or questions. I just don't really have any questions. I think there's some, you know, you get into pockets of friends and relatives, and you talk amongst yourself, and you tend to agree in that group, and then I think it can sometimes make you assume, myself included, that the majority agrees with me. You know, and I go back to my original comment earlier, and maybe because I am cautious, but I'm unprepared as a board member to risk staff who are in the health, you know, that have compromised health situations as well as an age group at not slow starting school. I just think it's a necessary precaution to moving forward. But that's, again, just one board member's view.